Good evening, Los Angeles. Welcome.
Welcome
to K-Chung Radio, K-Chung. Chinatown's only micro-broadcasting radio station.
That's right.
I'm Nicholas Miller, here with my tireless co-host, Stephen Cato. Why don't you say hi, Steve?
Hi, Steve. Joke never gets old. Yes, hi. Hi, Nicholas. Hello, Los Angeles. Hello, K-Chung regulars. Hi there. Hi.
That's right. You know, Steve, I haven't seen you all week.
Oh, no.
Where have you been?
I've been around. I've been trying to learn some new things. My friend Keith, he's quite an avid surfer. I've been trying to learn a little bit about, not so much trying myself, but maybe working up to a point where, you know, I've been living in Southern California for a while now, and maybe it's time when Keith and I are hanging out, when I just hear Keith talking about surfing, maybe I should actually try, you know, getting my feet wet a little bit. I'm notoriously afraid of moving water, but, you know, conversation is maybe the first step I'm taking. So I've been hanging out with my buddy Keith, and we've been going over this ocean question a lot. That's what I've been up to.
Yeah. Well, for our listeners out there, Steve and I normally hang out during the week.
Oh, come on,
we'll go get a beer or some noodles or maybe even see a Kunst show.
You're being unfair.
Or a movie.
A movie.
One of those Hollywood movies. We both like action movies.
We like action movies.
Love those action movies. Mm-hmm. But not this week.
You're being unfair.
Which actually may have turned out for the best because I really went on a vigorous hunt this week for a good guest, and I put my whole shoulder into it, really pushed as hard as I could, and I got a great guest who, since Steve has been MIA, has idea who he or she is. And our guest has entered into the booth just now. There he is. Hey, oh, I gave away the gender. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
But with a little shroud over his head.
He has a towel on his head.
It's a little creepy, but
that's weird.
That's okay,
Nicholas.
Because I think, Steve, you're going to be really excited about this one. So here we go. All right, you ready? Ready, guest? One, two, three, John Mouse.
Yeah, no. I'm John Mouse, and I'm here talking with what am I talking with? Ambivalent, of course. Do you know what I mean? It was the first time that I was dealing a tiny bit with those. With more kind of dubious mechanisms, you know, more that are more wrapped in with making sure the thing is more visible and this kind of, they, in other words, they aren't strictly DIY, so to speak. So, you know, in the name of punk rock or whatever, I felt a little bit ambivalent about that, you know, manufactured hype and things along those lines. But then I always like to make the disclaimer, right? My vocation isn't politics, right? I don't want to make a medium of politics. I want to make music. But then you got to think about that bullshit. If the minute you represent the thing or try to share the thing with the situation, inevitably it involves those political dimensions. You have the conceit. You have the outrageous belief that in this case, it will be exceptional. Do you understand? Somehow it will explode. It will mark a redistribution of that. It will speak to something else than those inhuman mechanisms when I bring this to bear. But again, I think we have to be really careful here, right? Whether our question is about music, about an artistic procedure versus a political. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not saying there isn't certainly an overlap somewhere, but essentially, right, they're disparate trajectories. So yeah, after the fact, bringing it to bear, dealing with these mechanisms. I said once before, a thing's visibility usually speaks to its untruth, doesn't it? I mean, but I also held the caveat that there are, of course, exceptions to this. You know, in popular music, I'd think of something like the Pistols, the punk rock thing, or even Nirvana, right? Where the thing is omnipresent, but there is perhaps an element of something else than inhumanity, a singularity, or whatever you want to call it, in there. It's disgusting. Of course I feel violated, and I feel complicit, and I feel like I must have been in the midst of a fever dream, and Lucifer came to me, and I didn't even know it, or something like that. You know what I mean? But the only thing we can do at this point is try to rip it down, right? I mean, I'll go hide. I promise myself I won't let it get to the point where I'm wearing assless chaps and just smiling and doing the, you know, exactly what I'm supposed to, you know what I mean? Yeah, I live in the country in Minnesota, about 2 hours south of the nearest city. I mean, it's a strange place. I mean, perhaps uniquely speaks to the whole political situation of our generation, in the sense that when I was a kid, about 86, there was one of the last standoffs between old New Deal, if you're familiar with this term, labor, and Reagan. There was a strike in the town, and the one factory in my town is a place that makes Spam. You know Spam? That's what they do there. And so there was a standoff, and of course labor was crushed, and the whole town transformed overnight to like a refugee camp, because they brought in all the third world labor to blow out hog brains for $3 an hour or whatever. So it's an interesting story. I get the impression you guys are interested in politics. I talk about that. But yeah, I lived there by myself. I hate that. I wish I had friends like you that I could talk with and stuff like that. And I always refused. I don't like this whole romanticizing solitude type of thing. Maybe that's too complicit or speaks to some kind of individual or something like that. But at the same time too, the more I'm there, the more I kind of see the whole essential solitude thing in the work, you know, that there is some kind of strange truth to that notion, you know? I don't know. I'm sorry if I'm rambling. I don't see it. I don't see it. That's the beautiful thing about being in the middle of nowhere, is I kind of get to hide my head in the dirt. You know what I'm saying? The people in Austin, Minnesota, you know what I mean? But it is still in a teacup, right? I mean, the whole, the type of music and all this stuff we're doing, I mean, it's not at the level of some of the more dangerous things, I wouldn't think. Visible yet. If we were truly visible, the whole thing would be undone. Do you know what I'm saying? It'd be undone. I say this about Ariel, right? He hasn't been represented yet. If he was represented, the whole thing, there'd be no need for art anymore. No, I'm not. I'm very unprolific. I'm very, very unprolific. I got, since 1999, I got those three albums. I mean, at the peak of it, I was doing a song a month back in 2003 or whatever, which I think is very relatively unprolific. I mean, most people write, I get the impression, I could be wrong, they smoke dope and make beats. That's what precisely it's been about, and it's very, very difficult. I mean, how do we do it? I mean, it's an impossibility, it's an unspeakable thing, who knows, right? You know, I'd want to ascribe a lofty thing to it, like love, you know, or something like that. Imagination for a world where we'd be emancipated, or whatever, you know, this kind of thing. You mentioned the postmodern condition, this kind of thing, and your man from Slovenia has this idea, right, that it's universally taken for granted, the theses of postmodernism. But at least in the States, that's not. I mean, maybe in the provincial discourse of the university, that's true. But you go talk to folks, you know, just that you meet everyone. They don't take the theses of postmodernism as their starting point. I mean, in our television shows, with the liberal television shows, they take the dialectic of enlightenment for granted. They believe there's a positive truth that they have a grasp on. They believe in humanism and liberalism and this kind of thing. They don't take the language games and all that stuff, that there is no meta-narrative. They all believe in meta-narratives and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Why don't wholesale disagree with that? I think there is something to be learned from that, from, for lack of a better word, postmodernism. For whatever reason, this word has fallen out of favor, right? We don't, do you notice that? I don't know. What do they say? They say postmodernism. I don't know. But yeah. I mean, there's something to what was embodied in that on a deeper level that I think is worth salvaging. That's the whole pitiless censor idea, right? That's the whole we must become pitiless. You know, therefore, you know, since the situation is so sure of its ability to control, therefore we must become the pitiless censors. There's an insanity in that can ultimately be self-destructive. I mean, not speaking philosophically, but just speaking from my own experience, right? To actually do the insanity of committing yourself to that idea. I mean, there has to be a tiny bit of compromise in that, but that's the very idea, right? The way we do it is through the work, right? Maybe whether it's art or which I tell myself that's what I kind of decided to make a medium of, but there's politics too, and I think at least in the States, I can't speak for Europe, it was a remarkably impotent generation politically speaking. There wasn't very creative, there wasn't any, and I think we did cool, radical music with pop and stuff like that, but there wasn't any corresponding radical work done in politics. I don't think there were. You know, they had the invisible committee or whatever in France. Do you know this? The coming insurrection. This pamphlet. There was a couple things, but we had Occupy Wall Street, but nothing that met. The horror show of Abu Ghraib. Do you know what I'm saying? We got this great guy, he died a couple years ago, Hunter S. Thompson, you know him? He talked about this Abu Ghraib. He was an American hero, man. That was a fucking unbelievable horror show, and there was not a politics created that was adequate to it. But I think we've done music and probably science too. I don't follow it carefully enough, but there was science and there was thought. I mean, maybe it hasn't come out yet, but I imagine people our age have probably had interesting. But politics, I mean, we didn't, at least in the States, right? We didn't. We just sat on our fucking hands while the state humiliated human beings. And television is a great example of this. It really is my opiate. You know what I'm saying? Like, I lie to myself. I tell myself I'm only watching this because it mimics with perfect precision the corporate situation, this cooking competition show that I'm watching. You know what I mean? But I can't be sure of that. I grant that all of us who have paused for just a second to understand that's a horror. Do you know what I'm saying? That's an absolute horror. I mean, see, I guess I do understand that this is something I imagine we all took for granted. And talking to folks this last year and a half or whatever, I was really surprised to find out it wasn't. Like, for instance, in the States, I made a really stupid remark about record stores. And everybody thought I was saying, oh, I was happy that these poor guys were going out of business and stuff like that. So I was writing some of the guys and saying, look, you know, it was out of context, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, what I really meant is, you know, I hate the inhumanity of representation and capital and all this. So I'm talking to this guy and he's like, well, what's wrong with capitalism is great. You know what I mean? It's the best, you know? So I was really surprised that there is, you know, I really thought we all took for granted that the Society of the Spectacle or whatever was the supreme culmination of alienated humanity or whatever. The spectacles are a tool, right? I mean, in this sense, I've gone over it. In the old guys, the post-war guys, the guys born in the 50s, I mean, they're kind of grandpas now. Do you know what I mean? In their language, they're talking about old bourgeois European culture and things like this. And but even they have started to talk about the positive possibility. Do you know what I'm saying? In this alienated situation, you know, that it's only the logic that it's only when a house is burning that you can see the architectural flaws in it. You know what I'm saying? That for the first time, the true nature of language becomes apparent to humanity to the extent that it's been fully expropriated from us. Do you understand this whole idea that some encounter with it becomes possible that was never possible before because it's been so thoroughly, our very means of being in common language has been alienated from us in the spectacle. You know, it's no longer in the form of a presupposition that we all suppose that founds our common. It's in the form of the actual common itself being taken up, so that's what sets it apart from different situations, earlier situations, and there's a possibility that opens in that, and so that's what we can investigate, you know, or aim to investigate. Like genre films, I mean, some people might be quick to dismiss them as part and parcel with it, right? Like a James Cameron movie or... but, you know, I think about something like Terminator, you know, and I think that's too hasty to just instantly dismiss it as a mindless distraction. That's usually coupled, right, with that's mindless distraction. But what the contemporary artist is doing in his little white room is emancipated. It's emancipated from the circuits of capital. That's where we can finally be together, is in the art gallery. I mean, that's ridiculous, of course. When we can go eat meltdowns and fucking watch a metal skeleton coming out of flames, you know what I mean? Which has more aesthetic sublimity to it? Which speaks to a maybe that's completely ridiculous and naive of me to say. There's an American cultural critic guy who talks about these Neldin and Taylor movies. You know, Crank 2. It's just a fucking pornographic, racist horror show. Just like the ugliest cut up. You know, but perhaps it is that speaks to the decentered subject in a, as you were saying, the decentered subject in a more radical way than any busted up toys in an art gallery possibly could, you know. The task of any theory, I mean, this is, you know, and again, these are just suspicions, and I reserve the right to not be held to account for them, you know what I mean, because it's not anything I've thought about carefully enough. I haven't had time to go home and really mill over this shit, but yeah, I mean, there's such a beautiful correspondence in European history or whatever I find between music and thought. You know, it's a cliche to point out, but you know, the dialectic and the sonata development section, for instance, you know, where you have the motive unfold into the whole, or, you know, this is a ridiculous caricature, but you know what I mean, or the acorn grows into the tree or whatever. There's that strange correspondence in up until the 60s, right, where you've got somebody like Deleuze and somebody like Berio or Stockhausen, you know what I mean, where it's just the pure materiality, the sense, the, you know what I mean, this kind of thing, the plane of eminence or whatever. I don't know. So what would be the philosophical the corollary in thought to this this moment culturally, you know what I mean, that would give voice to its to its ecstatic reality or whatever, correspond to it in the sense that Adorno corresponds to Schoenberg or Hegel corresponds to Beethoven, or even maybe Kant corresponds to Haydn, I don't know. It's the greatest. You know, I mean, people talk about what a crank he was, what a elitist, what an aristocrat, but he was one of the few guys that actually fucking took the time to write about it. You know what I mean? From that, to really write about it again and again and again, even if he didn't have anything nice to say about it. But lots of what he said is absolutely holds and is absolutely something as would be pop artists or whatever we ought to reckon with. I don't, you know, this music they call it dubstep or whatever. You know, I was thinking about this, the pseudo individualization thing he talks about, where even if you try to do something aberrant, it's ultimately referred back to this periodic rhythm. So you see this, right, where they got the quintuplets over the, do you know what I mean? It's always the, or the triplets or whatever that are over this period, but it's ultimately always referred back to this periodic rhythm. Over and over again, no matter, it's a pseudo individualization. Do you know what I mean? But so I've suspected that perhaps a truer novelty or something can be encountered on the harmonic level. I mean, I could elaborate on this, you know, but I'm very interested, you know, musically speaking, in the sonorous mediacy of music itself. Do you know what I'm saying? In the sonic reality of it. All these political considerations are secondary to that. I think, for instance, we talk about a criticism adequate to the music. It would be a criticism. There's a tendency, I find, in music journalism, right, to subsume the music, or try to at least, exhaust it in generalities or particularities or, you know, genre, lyrics, this kind of thing. That says everything we need to say about it. There was a guy in Britain, a great guy who's written books on post-punk and stuff, but he claimed that, like Ariel Pink and all this stuff, it's just retromania. Talks about all. But I think a better bet, and this is just my suspicion, would be to engage these things in a more an old-fashioned way, with thought, at the level of their sonic details. Unfortunately, we only have a really old vocabulary to do this. You know, the Roman numeral analysis, looking at thematic relations, things like this. But I think we could explore. It might be more productive to consider music at that level. You know what I mean? You know, when I did actually meet Slovenia's, you know, whatever you'd say, big philosophical, I asked him, what about pop music, you know? And well, you know, write about, what if the, you know, why don't you write about that? And he said, I would if it, you know, if it was good. They wrote a fucking book on Wagner. Do you know what I mean? Like, Badu wrote this book on Wagner, and Zizek did the foreword to it, but they endorsed this Malisu too. Do you know Quentin Malisu? Do you know this whole thing? Like it's mind-blowing to me how insanely stupid that is, that After Finitude. I mean, am I wrong in this? Am I wrong in this? Why would they endorse that? I mean, it's mind-blowing to me, and we've got Critchley in the United States, this Simon Critchley, you know him? The same fucking thing. I mean, a book on Wagner, of all the things, you know, I don't know. If we're gonna write about an old guy, an old bourgeois music maker, you know what I mean? I like Beethoven, you know what I mean? You got Beethoven, reckon with that, you know? Adorno, he that was the guy he like almost couldn't say anything negative about, the one exception. I do think this culture, this old culture, should enter into our conversation. I do think it should be placed in constellation with what we're doing. I don't mean to just say we ought to forget about it and talk about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure instead. I just think, you know, Beethoven is in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, you know? So, do you know this movie? It's like two idiots take a time machine and they go get Sigmund Freud and Beethoven and a few other guys to help them write their history report. It's mind-blowing. It deserves a very thoughtful consideration, I think. One that isn't just simply explaining how it shows how Lacan was right, but you know what I mean? Like a real rigorous exegesis. I looked at Gary Wohr's song, Born of Light, just really quickly to give an example of this. You know, it's a six-section song. The intervals of the bass, they get smaller and smaller from the octave down to seconds at each subsequent section. I talked about the functional relationships in this old-fashioned language of Roman numeral analysis and explored how they kind of did something novel with those, so on and so forth. And I believed in doing that I show how all this six-section form gets shorter and shorter, the intervals get smaller and smaller, and it pivots around this middle section, you know, exploring, instead of giving it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or saying it sounds like this and it sounds like that, or talking about what micro genre it is, it's in this genre, you engage it at the level of its details. If there's nothing worth thinking about there, don't even talk about it. Don't even bother about it. Don't give it a thumbs down. Don't even talk about it. Why are you going to talk about it? Because the label paid you for advertisement space, so you got to talk about it? Like, no. Only talk about it if there's something interesting in there. And if you do talk about it because there's something interesting, try to give voice to precisely what in it is not reducible to other things. You know what I mean? And so I tried to do that through the details, you know. Tell me what's strange about it. Tell me what's singular about it. Critically speaking, tell me what aspects of our situation's untruth it gives voice to. Do you know what I mean? You'd be hard-pressed to find that, I would think, in a lot of the blogs or journalism or something like that. In this example I'm telling you where I talked about the Born of Light, I tried to talk about the way he mediates his voice using synthesizers and stuff, how that spoke to mediation and our, do you know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. You know, trying to explore it at those levels. But to just the thumbs up and the thumbs down or the... It seems like a waste. I think we owe each other more than that. And if we don't strive to do that for one another, then that's when we've given over to inhumanity. That's when we become the bureaucrat, you know? I know, and I don't, but that's what's so interesting about the internet, right? This positive possibility is I can talk about a chromatic mediant relationship offhand. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you just hop on Wikipedia really quick. Some asshole's written a whole goddamn thing about it, and you're a specialist in a matter of days, you know? I mean, it seems to me that that's the case, so yeah, watch, you know, the cooking competitive shows, but also, it amazes me. I can go watch a lecture on YouTube, and it's not this ridiculous stuff we got on television where it's like the scientist is going to come on and speak to us as children, you know what I mean, about string theory or whatever, and show like a computer animation of an eight ball going through a wall, and that's string theory. The eight ball goes through the wall, you know what I mean? Like the mathematics are too hard for you to understand. Just trust us, you know? But so instead of watching that douchebag, we can go watch some guy that's taking the time to actually do the linear algebra and show us all that stuff. I mean, it takes a tiny bit of labor, but then you can see the true beauty of the thing, or whatever, the radical possibilities in it. It's there. It's right there. It's right in front of us. I hate that. You know, I think that's why I made the terrible mistake of devoting the vocation of music in the humanities, is because they told me all that stuff was just too complicated for me to understand. Meanwhile, it's precisely those aspects, you know, the biopolitics, the science, the biology that the state seems very intent on exploiting today, at least partly. We can't forget about the likes and dislikes and the economy of the sign and all that, but there's also the biopolitical dimensions, like drug legislation and stuff like that, psychiatry, you know, all those aspects. I think about that. I think it, for a couple reasons. First of all, of course, because it can be, of course, just as much a work, a creative work as art, you know. But also because then you get to go around in our situation under the sign of truth. Do you know what I mean? Of real truth. You make a song, it's thumbs up, thumbs down. There's no truth involved. You say something about quantum tunneling, and you get to walk around under, do you know what I mean? You get to beat people over the head with, I know the positive truth. This is the theses of postmodernism have not been taken for granted. Everybody today, it seems to me, in my situation, whatever, I mean, for the most part, widely regards the dialect of enlightenment, positive science's claim to holding the absolute thing itself, the truth, the objective reality, so on and so forth. Yeah, exactly. That's what it kind of became, you know. It's really interesting what happened the last few years, and that's what's so strange about inscription on the internet, right? There's like, if you dig, we can find stuff we wrote when we were like 21, and it's all on there. Even if it was anonymous, it's all on there. When we were just little children, you know, just babbling, you know, it can be dug up and held over and against us. But so when I was really interested in the whole Nancy Blanchot community of singularities thing, and I was thinking about that, but that's in when I left, when I finished my coursework, when I was ABD. But that's when I had my revelation or whatever, you know, my I finally realized what probably all you guys already knew, which was, wait a second, these guys are like, they don't get it. Do you know what I'm saying? They're beautiful. They're great. They're wonderful. We should listen to them. But they're not. They didn't grow up watching E.T. You know what I'm saying? They're writing books about Wagner. You know what I mean? Which is great. You know, Wagner is great, but he has to be. You know, it's something else. Debord talks about what makes this spectacle so interesting. Right? Is it's managed to rear a whole generation, right, whose horizon of possibility was, and with that generation, we see everything that it's that it's capable of. This is in the commentary on the Society of Spectacle later on, right? And that's what I'm thinking of. That's all I'm saying. They're beautiful. They're wonderful. God bless them. But they weren't the generation that the board is talking about there. You know, that had So then I was like, okay, well, what the fuck am I gonna do? I mean, I can't just. It seems like a lot of the humanities stuff. I mean, I'm looking through these journal articles, and it's like, you know, Agamben is saying this, Heidegger says that. That's great. You can read. You know what I mean? You have an opinion about what he's saying. What do you got to say? Or something like that. I don't mean to take it back to the thumbs up, thumbs down, but it seems to me we could be having a better conversation or something. Don't get me wrong, the beautiful readers of Blanchot and Heidegger, it's wonderful what they bring to bear, but a 26-year-old writing about, Agamben says this and Badu says that, it just, you know, I got disillusioned with it. You know what I'm like? What? Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, we could. It, maybe I'm caricaturing it. Maybe that's not what they do. But it seems to me that that's what they do. Greil Marcus has a great book that the lipstick traces. If you know this, he invokes the board. It's about punk rock, and then I think about like this Kidler I was telling you about, or even Alvatore Renal, like. People that are, they don't forsake materiality is one thing that's really interesting. Like in the name of critical philosophy, saying we don't, we just forget about molecules and stuff because that's just a bunch of nonsense. Do you think that like molecules are just a bunch of fucking nonsense? I think like Hitler talks about. There is an encounter with the real that takes place. It isn't just what can't be signified. In this, if we start talking about technology, if we start talking about the gramophone, we're actually talking about modulations of the real, of a positive dimension of the real. When you slow down the playback of a gramophone, you're actually altering some aspect. You know what I mean? When you take a drug or whatever, you're actually encountering something that's positive, that is not necessarily immediate, but it isn't just what can't be signified, you know? So a respect for the possibilities of materiality or something like that. Yeah, materiality is something I'm really interested in. Like, I really came around on Deleuze, you know, those caricatures Badu and Zizek did of Deleuze and their little books on him. They're not fair. They're not fair. It comes to a thumbs up, thumbs down in a certain sense. Well, he was wrong. His ontology was wrong. He just describes life under capitalism. Let's forget about him. You know what I mean? There's sense and materiality. These are dimensions that thought ought to invoke and mobilize. You know what I mean? Because the state's certainly busy mobilizing our molecular substrate. Do you know what I mean? They're certainly busy sinking their fingers into that. So to just say, oh, well, that's beyond our ability to apprehend. There is no access to it. It just seems to me complicit. It seems to me politically impotent, you know? Yeah. It's this Wolfgang Schirmacher. It was his brainchild. He's great. He's a madman. He's got his own philosophy too. That's precisely about this, like the simultaneity of all time. The event is this immediate moment. Mobilize it creatively. Use it. But yeah. I mean, I was at another grad school for a while, and then. It was an art school, and I wanted to talk about truth and all this stuff, and I remember once I was in a room, and this was artists, and I go, you mean to tell me none of you guys believe there's a trans-historical element to an artwork that transcends culture and transcends history and speaks to eternity? And they all just laughed at me. Do you know what I'm saying? They all just laughed at my dumb, old-fashioned, I believe in humanity, you know, the possibility, you know, they just laughed at me. So I thought I'd go they kicked me out, but I thought I'd go to this EGS. And you know why it was great? Not because of the faculty, maybe I was just lucky, but a lot of grad schools in the States, I get the impression it's like all these people at each other's throats. Like, I can read so-and-so better than you can read so-and-so. And I can read them in French, too. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of piss contest or something. Stuck up in the mountains with a bunch of other people that just wanted to, have an enthusiastic conversation about what was interesting in all this stuff, there was none of that. And I think that's what made it so great. It's enigmatic and it's right. I mean, by and large, I think, who cares what my dumbass has to say about him, first of all, but second of all, it's a force for good, ultimately, you know what I'm saying, right? That cultural signifier, right? In the end, where there wasn't nothing before, even a caricature of Hegel is better. Do you know what I mean? Where there was nothing before, if the Elvis of philosophy or whatever has to come to bring it, it's better than nothing at all. But yeah. I mean, I wonder about this. Like, not just him, but all those guys. All those radical philosophers, you know, you think about Agamben's tone, do you know what I mean? His tone, is the tone of his prose, this Heideggerian, you know, just, you know what I mean? Just, it's serious, you know, Heidegger, you know what I mean? Like, okay, so yeah, what about the your publishing companies and all, you know, this kind of thing? Like, that's never, I think Nancy wrote a book on books, you know, maybe that talks about publishing or something like that. But you gotta wonder about that, right? I mean, at least when I'm putting out my music, I wonder about that. Is this politically wrong, you know what I mean? That I would mix up with, that I would do, you know what I mean? Let it be mediated in this way. And it doesn't seem like they're very interested in thinking about that at all, right? They're... But he's not, yeah, I mean, he's not like Jan Bernstein or something like, or Harris with Hegel's Ladder, like really going through each little paragraph of the phenomenology and trying to, you know what I mean? It's not that, Yeah, that's absolutely the case. I would agree with that. You have to, you can't, you gotta have some sense of that, don't you? I mean, in the misanthropic stuff we were talking about, like, I hate people. I don't want to talk to people, you know what I mean? Like, they're idiots. I don't see what's radical about that, personally. I like the Ranciere's thing about, no, everybody's, capable, there may be structural injustices and the state may limit horizons of possibility for certain existences, but it's there and can be seen in the element of its singularity. And when it is, it's not strictly a vulgar trauma, a disgusting encounter with tentacles. It can be an ecstatic and beautiful and wonderful thing too. In fact, the reason we live, you know what I mean, in a certain sense, the reason to keep going, to see one another in that way, that to me seems a much more radical wager than they're all just idiots and, you know, or something like that. But that's a caricature to say that he's saying that, but you know what I mean, right? I hate teaching. I hate talking to students. That seems like a bad bet. I could be wrong, but it seems like we ought to. You know, I like the lyrics to my pop song. You know, do your best. You know, reach out your hand. You know, the moment epitomized in orthodoxy in the moment of, you know, in that I maybe it's totally bad faith, totally ridiculous of me to say, but I there's something about that. Let me be guilty before the birds and the grass and before all, and so that all might forgive me wouldn't that be heaven? You know what I mean? If we strip all the bad faith out, maybe there's some radical core to that. That's beautiful to love in this deeply, for lack of a better word, religious sense, as opposed to being a misanthrope or a fucking celebrity. You got to be against that. Certainly, that's the where you got to begin from. Is being against that. Certainly, I don't think you're going to find any argument from anyone that it would be much more radical if he walked out of the lecture and threw his $10,000 to the first street urchin he saw. You know what I'm saying? Here you go. You know what I mean? But that's a whole other level. You know, that's the Franciscan wager that I've always found to be kind of an impasse, a kind of the truest and most sublime kind of political radicalism you could possibly aspire to, and that we to, you know, of which we all fall short, you know, in the end. That's the reality of the thing, right? It gets into a really vulgar thing. I mean, they want to conflate praxis and theory. They want to say, like, even Adorno a little bit, right, that theory is already praxis. And I really appreciate the thought there, but then sometimes I wonder if it's not a more radical thing to go and bring some people into your house and who don't have a place to stay and bullshit with them and they might steal your television when you're asleep at night, but you did your best and gave them a place that, you know, maybe there's something more radical about that than writing a book about Hegel and Lacan. I don't, you know. But that's the thing, you know, I don't mean to be dialectical and say, you know, I'm the negative. I mean, we need to move beyond the dialectics maybe, but I think that the real Zizek, in the sense that it would be a genuine, and I know it sounds ridiculous and it's a cop-out and it would be something to go and really think about. It's us. It's every, you know what I mean? It's that there is no Lady Gaga. It's that there is no Zizek. It's that there is just us. Do you know what I mean? Having a conversation. There isn't the guy that stands up on the thing that knows. Do you know what I mean? And then says, oh, there's nobody that knows from the thing, and we have to it's to refuse to stand up there, and instead, I mean, maybe that's totally naive and ridiculous to say, and a totally impotent cop out. But it's you, man. You know what I'm saying? Is that ridiculous? It's the collective that you got. It's the guys up in Sweden I met, the psychic warfare. It's all of us having a conversation. I mean, I'm standing in front of this fucking camera right now. I told you, that's precisely why this is problematic. You know, it's whenever I talk to somebody, I'm like, well, tell me about you too. You know what I'm saying? Like let's go in that direction. That's what it is, right? Something like that, something along those lines. It's that everybody's capable, got a phenomenology of spirit that they got a right, so to speak, that they can share with us. The real thing is an end to that altogether. Is an end to the figure that enjoys a visibility greater than his fellows. You know, an end to the. To the figure who has a greater mobility and greater access to this and that than all his comrades. You know what I'm saying? That's what the real thing is the end of that, right? I don't know. Yeah, that's really important, and this is a total. Abyss, right? I mean, a total thing that you just don't talk about if you're doing serious thought, right? Like practical pragmatism type of stuff. Virtue in the old-fashioned sense of it. But yeah, I got buddies. You know, I'm out there at the funny farm. I call it the funny farm. And I don't return their phone calls because it's like I can't hang out with them. And I get so involved in what I'm doing. And I tell myself it's okay because ultimately it's something good that I'm working on that I'm gonna try to share. Do you know what I mean? The only evil or whatever that I've ever seen is firsthand is the bureaucrat. You know what I mean? And I've been guilty of that in my own life. One time, to just say to somebody, if I made an exception in your case, I'd have to make an exception for everybody. So I'm not going to make an exception in your case. That's the worst thing you can do. Maybe something like that is not make an exception in their case. You know why I'm isolated and I've told you I think that's ridiculous, but I've got an open door. You know what I mean? I've got an open door that people are welcome to come in. Giving the benefit of the doubt, trying to listen to people insofar as it's possible. You know, just really basic, ridiculous, unphilosophical. Stuff. Being a sweet dude. I like this idea. Radical, right? We use the word radical a lot. And this is an English thing. This is a States thing. This is a genre film that I grew up on kind of thing. But in the movie I was talking about, Bill and Ted even, they say radical all the time, you know? So it's this new sense of the word radical as opposed to I'm a radical. You know what I mean? Like, be a sweet dude. You know what? It sounds really stupid and maybe it's totally unrigorous of me. But it's being a sweet, Bill and Ted, they say be excellent to each other, party on, you know what I'm saying? But that's dangerous, right? The party on, like go, you know, be complicit with the spectacle, but be excellent to each other. It's this whole idea like, we can get around people are idiots thing by blaming it all on inhumanity. Do you know what I'm saying? I really believe that. You know, it's not their fault. It's inhumanity's fault. You know, recognizing. You know, these are giant questions that I haven't even, you know, we'll have to reckon with for the rest of our lives or whatever. But it's the best thing you can do to walk out of the lecture with the 10 grand in your pocket. And at least, I'm talking, you got 10 grand in your pocket. Go, okay, Jesus, there's no way that I can be adequate to this. This is humbling beyond anybody's capacity to fully integrate it. The first human being that comes up and asks me for anything, I'm going to give them 100 euros. Just 100 fucking euros out of this 10,000 I just got. So, you know, something like, you know, I don't, maybe that's ridiculous. Maybe that's a silly thought or something like that. But it's a trajectory that isn't even, we don't even talk about, you know what I mean? Like, let's talk about the graph of desire or something instead of, you know, whether we should, you know, give the money we got in our pocket to the homeless guy. Let's talk about the algebra of, you know what I mean? Of, you know, the woman and the man, and there is the phallic exception and the not the phallic exception, as opposed to what we should do with the 10 grand we have in our hand. I don't like pragmatism. Pragmatism is, it's boring, isn't it? Pragmatic philosophy. I haven't even read any of it, like how we ought to be in the world, but the sweet dude thing, it like goes beyond any of that, doesn't it? To do more than to be of service, to do more than you're required, to act as if it all counts, that as if it will all be counted, and it will all be counted. This is the stupid messianic, vaguely even theist. You know, with all apologies, I don't mean to lean with my chin. I very much respect with all my heart this notion that it is a vulgarity, an obscenity beyond any comprehension to evoke the divine in the face of the atrocities we've all witnessed. But nonetheless, you know, I can't shake the suspicion that it will all count. Do you know what I mean? Or certainly that we should act as if it will all be counted. As if everything that wasn't counted will be counted, as if there will not be we ought to act as if there will be a fullness of time. Weeping at the feet of the leper, you know that that moment in the Saint Francis. It's just I see something beyond all this ridiculous theology. Very revolutionary in that moment. Do you know what I mean? To do that, to reach out your hand to the one alone or whatever. Like in here, I've got to refer to experience. Here, I've got to like not to play act at being a philosopher and say no. Really, in my experience, in my life. The only true happiness I've ever known, and I don't give a fuck how they try to dismiss it away is in that radical moment of charity. Do you know what I'm saying? In going above and beyond in that sense, in the crazy and the homeless and all that shit, like really doing something for them. Do you know what I mean? Really, practically, in front of me, in my life, doing something in that sense. You know what I mean? They do this on the liberal talk shows in the States. We've got one channel that's just all the people like, America is the best, and the terrorists are going to get us, and, the government wants to take away our guns, and Obama is a socialist, and that's a bad word in the United States. And then the other channel is they're all just idiots, and let's laugh at them and make fun of them. And of course, as radicals, we reject all that nonsense. you know, you can talk to both of them. You really can. I mean, I got buddies in my small town that I live in. Obviously, they really are conservatives in this sense. But you can, you know, I agree with you, man. I want limited government too. But how about we get rid of the government altogether? You know what I'm saying? How about we do? You know what I mean? Like, being granting people the benefit of the doubt in that way, verifying your suspicions with them, inviting them to verify your suspicions with them. That's the thing that's radical about charity, right? We're just gonna fucking blabber like this back and forth. Is it this way? Is it that way? Is it the case that there's always going to be the guy with the bowler hat that comes and smashes your crystal castle no matter what you do, no matter how you try to speak with him, no matter how much you invite him? You know, yeah, it's all abstract nonsense, but then there's the moment where you walk out of the lecture and maybe that doesn't give people, certain people, joy. Maybe it does really hurt them, but and so here, I suppose, there is some kind of universal perspective in that. I really do suppose, I just can't imagine a case where you wouldn't do that and not feel the miracle of it. Do you understand? That there's not anybody on earth, that there isn't anything, that would do something like that and not see that it was, for lack of a better word, truly good. Do you know what I mean? It feel that, you know what I mean? So I'm invoking feeling, and I'm like the most unthoughtful. And that's the thing about experience, right? The invoking experience is, you're not allowed to do it, I guess. But that's the only true joy there is. I mean, this is why I think, in a certain way, the essential ethics of the Christianity or whatever mark an impasse for us. You know what I mean? To love others or what? I don't know. I don't. It's a really, really difficult question. It's really hard to approach in a thoughtful way, because it's a question that there's no precedent for. It's a question that's been completely suspended. Practical questions, day-to-day life, how should we behave, walking around on the street. There's no, they don't write about that shit. So all we're left with is the people stupid enough to write about that shit. You know what I'm saying? And they all say what the same thing people have been saying for, you know, 2,000 years. The thing you ought to do is give everything you have. You know what I mean? To love others, to give them the benefit of the doubt, to seek to understand rather than to be understood, to seek to bring light where there is darkness, to seek to console instead of to be consoled. You know what I mean? This tired, ridiculous, old-fashioned, politically impotent ethical agenda is still the best bet, or something. And to hold oneself to that standard and no one else, you know what I mean? Only the first person can say this. So there's that weird thing in Kierkegaard, like, you know, I can only worry about myself, but is he saying we should all only worry about ourselves? Let there be no ambiguity about that. I can only do what I, you know what I mean? What I can do for us, you know what I mean? I'm not saying you should do it, or you should do it, or anybody else should do it, or that I should expect them to do it. I'm only saying this is for me, this is my suspicion. I invite you to verify it with me. Am I right in this suspicion? But it's only what I can do, you know what I'm saying? And yes, it's very likely that you will come across a Nazi thug. That would seem to be the case. The pig, the disgusting double-chinned pig who pulls the guy over, and the transgender person over, and fucking humiliates him and hassles him. And we got a television show the United States called COPS. And it's all these guys, and they just humiliate black people and humiliate, you know, that's all it is. Have you ever seen THX 1138 by George Lucas? It's his first film before he did Star Wars. There's three TV channels in his dystopian future. One is just a pig beating a guy over and over again. The other one is just a pornographic channel of a woman, you know, dancing around. And the other one is just two idiots making jokes with one another. And that's the three channels he has. You know what I mean? And he just walked. So, yeah, we've got the channel of the pig. So it's very likely you'll meet the pig. But even in that case, by the standard I'm suggesting is the best one I know of, as ridiculous as it is, I'm supposed to try. Really, man, you're going to do this. You're going to be that. You're going to forsake your humanity. You're going to forsake in the name of inhumanity. You're really going to do this. You're really not going to see me. And of course, he really isn't. He really is going to put the handcuffs on and humiliate you, and because he can't make an exception in your case, because he'd have to make an exception. He really is. But what else can I do? I mean, I can't ask him to do anything else. There's still the possibility there of uniting with them in a ununited thing. You know what I'm saying? Of approaching something where we could. Where we wouldn't, where there would be no one that unites us all. You know what I mean? Where we could undo that altogether and be the infinite multiplicity that we are, or whatever. There's a chance for that, of course, in every single thing we do. And so, in the situation where there's structural injustices and material abundance here and deprivation there. When you actually do something concrete that, however small and however ineffectually, it's like this, right? It's like this, if I could put it away. Imagine we all just acted that way today. We all just decided, you know, shit, I'm just going to give my fucking money away. I'm just going to go, you know what I mean? I'm just going to, and we all just did that, you know? We all just decided to do that. That would be it, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be all it would take.
Wow. All it would take, John.
Wow.
That would be all that it would take. Wow.
Wow.
Wow's right, Steve, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's been a dream of mine to have John on the show for a long time. I'm thrilled that you found him, Nicholas. That's fantastic. I thought he had a strong dislike for being in Southern California. So, you know, I'm impressed that you lured him here. Wow, Nicholas.
Yeah.
Great job.
Yeah, it was funny to hear the bit of John talking about how sometimes he doesn't answer his friends' calls either. I bet you empathize with that, Steve, don't you?
Oh, you know, I mean, I empathize with John on a lot of points. But, you know, Nicholas, I think you're taking this a little too personally. I think it's not fair for you to drag this out in front of our guest personally, right?
Right.
Right.
And I'm sure
right.
John's friends feel the same way, but when you don't answer my calls, Steve, I know it's because you're doing something important. And
I'm learning about
water.
At some
point, maybe a few days later, maybe 100 years from now, I know you're going to share that, Steve. You're going to share that important thing that you've been working on.
Jesus Christ, Nicholas, I can't believe this. Seriously. There's people in radio land hearing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew.
Yeah,
I knew you'd like our guest tonight. I'm
thrilled.
There are so many problems about being a reflective critical artist today that I feel like Mr. Mouse nails on the head. Wouldn't you say, Steve?
I would totally agree. I continue to be impressed, but absolutely the way he goes back and forth between like. Appraising the material existence of things, for example, whereas in sort of weird concert with or against the sort of thesis of postmodernism, I was in love with that part of the talk. There were so many elements of the talk where I was just thrilled.
Yeah, I guess so. If I could be a little bit clearer, I would say that he at least allows the problems to appear in a way that they aren't closed.
Sure.
But that they, the true complexity of them,
well,
appears.
Nick, I'm sorry you feel so burned about the way I haven't called you all last week.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, that issue of presence is difficult.
It's
very difficult.
I understand. I just don't think this is the place.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I feel you. There's definitely a tendency to fetishize people like Marcel Bruter, who kind of hid for a long time. I gotta say, I have a greater affinity with someone like Ian Hamilton Finlay, who just chose to garden instead, but really was making very complex, difficult artworks at the same time. But well, I don't know. There's too much to say for one night. But I hope all you gentle listeners got something out of that. I know I sure did. I don't even know if I'll be able to sleep. But that's it for tonight. So be excellent to each other. Good night, everyone.
Party on, Los Angeles. See you next week.